You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Grizz on Twitter, and make sure you follow me on Twitter as well at King_producer. Got a good show for you guys. Got a special guest for you guys. A little bit of news. I'm going to be out next week. I'm going to be on vacation with my family. Going to be at Disney World for most of the time. So taking our kids to Disney World and hopefully having some good time. But the show will continue. I got a good friend of mine, Sean Coleman, on the show today, who will also be our guest host all next week. What's going on, Sean?
Doing well. Just excited to talk some Grizzlies.
So I brought Sean on today. Sean Coleman is a writer at Grizzly Bear Blues with myself. Covers the Grizzlies as well as I do. He has a article out that was it today that was out or yesterday? It was a really good piece about Kyle Anderson. I want to talk about that first. I want to talk about this Kyle Anderson thing. And we've talked about this a little bit, just general like texting and stuff. But how do you foresee the Grizzlies or what they should use Kyle or how should they use Kyle Anderson?
It's a funny question because when you think of Kyle Anderson, his style of play is such a contrast, but in general, he fits the Tony Allen role so well, but can expand upon it. You know, Tony Allen was someone who, through effort and just, you know, mobility and passion, athleticism, he made plays just by always moving. Well, the thing with Kyle Anderson is that it's intelligence. And so going forward, I think that, like I put in the article today, what makes his value with the Grizzlies, just like with Tony Allen, their style of play is so much better on the Grizzlies scheme than it is most of the rosters. So I feel that he's that non-scoring threat on offense, but it's not a 4-on-5 thing like it was with Tony a lot of times. You can utilize his passing. You can utilize his baseline movement. And then on defense, he's the ultimate weapon on the perimeter. His length, his intelligence, his ability to be able to, you know, be proactive in his thought process. It's such a wonderful thing to have. It's one of those things you can't teach that just makes a team's defense that much better. So very much think he could be in the Tony Allen, you know, role for the next several years, but can evolve in terms of being an access point for passing on offense and just a wonderful, you know, source of turnovers and stops on defense.
Yeah, we've talked about it on the show quite a bit, or I have. You know, just the use of Kyle Anderson and what they should do with him. You know, I really want to see them use Kyle, bring the ball up more. I mean, he said that in his press conference when he got here, that he wanted to make people better. And the way he made people better was by bringing the ball up the floor, getting them involved in the offense. And that's something that Kyle Anderson can do and can do really well. So I really hope that the Grizzlies can continue to you've seen it over the past couple games. I think that they continue to try to find a way to use him more. And hopefully the Grizzlies can continue to do that, because I think he's so beneficial to the offense. Because the way you mentioned it, we were talking before the podcast, but the way he cuts through the defense, he draws defenders. The way he plays defense is amazing. Like I said on the show yesterday, I gave this example to everybody else, and I know that you listen to the show every day, so I know you heard it, but I was talking about there were points in the game at Clippers game where he was able to contest threes, and then he was able to still contest a three and then still get back to be able to grab a rebound, or at least get a hand on a rebound, which is it's so rare. He plays with such a level of intensity. But I do want to move on. I want to talk a little bit about the rookie, Jaren Jackson. He has been, I would say, probably better than we expected him to be at this point in his career, for sure. But where do you land on the minutes played, the fouling, not fouling, letting him play, not letting him, where do you land in that situation with Jaren Jackson, especially at the end of games?
The mentality for Jaren Jackson should be do whatever you can to develop his game. And that's the way that it works is that it seems like a lot of times J.B. Bickerstaff is on the spectrum of, well, let's do what, you know, traditionally makes sense with the rookie to give us the best chance to win this year with veterans and things such as that. At the end of the day, Jaren Jackson is your third best weapon to win. Behind Mike and behind Mark, Jaren Jackson's offensibility and his natural defensibility, it just makes it happen. If he fouls out, okay. But at the very least, him being on the court is what gives you the best chance to win, and that's what you've got to go with. And it's a double-edged sword, I guess, for lack of a better term, of positivity. It gives your team the best chance to win, and it gives him more ability to be able to develop. And you can see from the fouls, it's becoming less of an issue as we go game to game. So I think that at the end of the day, you just need to keep it simple. Scheme with him, do what you need to do. But when you feature him, that's when some of your best runs of the season have happened. So I think he needs to be on the court at all times.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost kind of contradictory whenever you say that you – because I've asked JB about this, or not myself. I think someone asked JB about the offense at the end of games. I don't know. I don't remember who it was. But someone asked JB about this, and he said, well, I'm going to roll with my best players at the end of the game. Someone asked about Mark and Mike closing out games and playing too many minutes, and he said, well, I'm going to roll with my best players in the game. Well, if that's the case, then you should be rolling with Jaren Jackson Jr. because, like you said, he's your third best scoring player, whether you like it or not. He is the third option on this team. And it almost seems like this team goes, and I don't know if you noticed, but I feel like this team, it goes from first quarter offense where Jaren's getting a lot of looks and he's running down the court and he's getting a really nice early post possession, and then in the fourth quarter, it seems like that just disappears. And the offense, I know the offense simplifies and down the stretch and gains, but it simplifies so much where he is non-existent or on the bench.
And that's where I think that JB is. He's a liability as a coach. That's the best way that I could put it. What I mean by that is that he seems to have his way of doing things. It does work at times. But he doesn't seem to be – it doesn't seem like he likes to adapt that much. He has his way of doing things. He's going to stick with it. But when there are clear evidence that it's not working, his ability to change isn't that well. And at the end of the day, you've got to go with what gives you the best chance to win. And when Mark, Mike, and Jaren are on the court with a combination of Kyle, Garrett, Shelvin, amongst others, it needs to rotate around those three. And I just think that, you know, the energy that they come out with, that's the thing about it. It's the energy. And if Jaren can add that energy there late in games like he can at the beginning of games, that, to me, is a scoring push that we're sorely missing to close out wins. And that's why I think you need to feature him.
Yeah, I mean, I said this in the summer that J.B. Bickerstaff was by and far along from a qualified head coach. You know, and I got killed for it in the summer for just saying that he still has a lot left to prove, which is the truth. And he still has a lot to prove. I mean, I was singing his praises a couple weeks ago, and I still think he's done a better job than I thought he would at this point in the season. But I still think he's got some very questionable lineups at times. I think he's got a long way. I think he's got a long way to go. He's learning just like just like Jaren Jackson's learning. He's learning as well. So, I think so. He's got a long way to go, but I also think he's probably better than I thought he, or most of us thought he would be, or this team would be at this point in the season, for sure.
Not taking anything away from what JB has done. Just at times, I think his ability to adapt in the games can leave a little bit to be desired.
Absolutely.
Well, yep. Let's not kid ourselves. He was credited with changing the Rockets defense back in the 15-16 season, or excuse me, 14-15 season by Kevin McHale. The embracing that he's done to make our defense where it is, that's on him. He's done a marvelous job there. He's just got to become more creative on offense to really give us a chance to get where we can get.
The Grizzlies have definitely tripled down on defense. And that comes with their latest signing of Joakim Noah. What do you think about the signing just in general?
It's quadrupling down. It's whatever you want to call it. At the end of the day, Joakim Noah fits the Grizzlies perfectly. I've always thought that Marcus Smart would be the one of any person out there. I thought that the most Grizzlies type player was Marcus Smart, but before that it was Joakim Noah. Him and Mark, I don't necessarily know in today's NBA if you can play them that much, especially in there since they've, you know, the ages they are now. But he is a perfect backup center for the Grizzlies. I wasn't necessarily that thrilled with using that roster spot on him because it was doubling, tripling down too much on defense. But there's no doubt he fits the roster. And if he can play like he did last night in a limited time frame, it does nothing but adds value. And Mark definitely needs to get his minutes trimmed down a little bit. So it looks like it was a good signing for us. And I'm on board with it now more than I was probably 5 days ago.
Yeah, I'm probably more, you know, just seeing him move around the court, obviously it's one game. So, like, we can't really take much away from him and the way he played on against the Clippers. But, you know, it is definitely something to look forward to. It's definitely something to really try to pay attention to for sure. I mean, I made it very clear I did not want that the B roster spot to be used on Joakim Noah. But, you know, if he is like I said this on several shows, if he is someone that can be consistent in 15 games or so, then he will make Jamaica Green more expendable. And I've been Jamaica Green's champion this year. I mean, he's been so consistent and so good for this team. But if Joakim Noah could come in and be that, then yeah, he makes Jamaica Green a little bit more expendable. He makes it to where you might be able to, trade Jamaica Green for another wing. And if that's their intention, then great. I'd be surprised if that was like their long-term goal, but if they just happen to luck into it, like they do a lot of times, then that's great. I think that's something they should definitely take a hard, long look at in January. If you look up and no Joakim Noah is still playing the way he was, and maybe he's gotten better, then you go, you know what? Jamaica Green might not be as safe as we once thought. He's an expiring contract. People, other teams might want a reliable, consistent backup big on their roster because that's exactly what Jamaica Green is. So who knows? It's only time will tell if it's a good or bad signing. As of right now, obviously everybody loves it because of the one game, but we'll also remember Ish Smith had like 4 good games. So just remember that. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more after the break with Sean and myself talking more Grizzlies. And then we're in the last segment of this, of the show today, we'll kind of preview the Grizzlies Pelicans game that's coming up on Friday night. Welcome back to the show. Again, we're having Sean Coleman, a good buddy of mine. Again, if you missed it in the first segment, which I don't know how you did if you gotten this far in the show, but just in case you did, I'll be out of town next week. But that doesn't mean the show doesn't go on. Sean's going to be guest hosting the Locked On Grizzlies podcast all next week. Going to help me out. And while I'm out of town at Disney World, he's going to step in and give you guys some Grizzlies content. He's a great writer at Grizzly Bear Blues. Again, he just had an article released today about Kyle Anderson. It was a really, really good read. Make sure you go check it out. But we'll continue our conversation with Sean here. And I do want to ask you, some people, I was on Greg and Eli's show today on Sports 56, and Greg asked me this, and I honestly had not been asked it yet, so I thought it was an interesting take. But he asked me if I thought that Mark or Mike would be an all-star this year. And I know what I said, but I want to get your take. If there is a representative from the Grizzlies, you think they'll have someone there?
It has to be Mike. It's his year. I'm always been a big advocate of the fact that, you know, you need the stats there, you need the production, but you need the narrative as well. And the narrative's all there for Mike. He's a 12-year vet. Always, he's been a snub a few years. He's just been a victim of numbers, basically. There's just been such a strong point guard representation in the West. But coming off the injury last year, the Grizzlies being better than most people thought, will probably still be in playoff contention come February. And I just think that I think both could have a little. Mark may have a better case than Mike, but I think there's going to be enough push this year where it's probably going to be Mike year, and it's well deserved. He needs to make an all-star team, but stats may not be there. I think that some other point guards that are usually there being injured helps him out, like Paul and Stephen Curry. But I think the stats will be there enough, but the narrative, I think, should definitely result in him being an all-star.
Yeah, because Mike's always just been he's been a victim of other people. You know, it's Mike's always been good. And I don't think that's ever been the question of whether Mike's been good or not. He's just had a problem because there's so many other good guards in the West. That's his problem. And the only thing I'll say about Mark is he's playing a version of Mark we've never seen. He is playing as good as he was on defense that year. He won Defensive Player of the Year. He's playing as good on offense and shooting the ball from three as well as he did 2 years ago. And he's rebounding the ball as well as he did his third year in the league. So he's taken – there's all the – you know, all every year he's been really good at something. Like, he was really good on defense, and then a couple years ago he was really good on offense and, you know, we're starting to shoot the three ball well. And this year he's doing all of those things. And he's doing all that really well. And there hasn't been a center that's come in this year that's really given Mark the business. Like, he's – taking everybody to the woodshed, save for a couple matchups. Young centers, old centers, good centers, bad centers. He is dominated almost every one of those matchups. And he's playing, he's having a career year. He's playing the best basketball Mark's ever played. And I think that goes a long way to because of the people he's playing with. Mark loves playing with high IQ basketball players, and that's what this team is. I mean, that's what the starting five is now. They're so smart. And so it makes Mark want to play. I think that has a lot to do with it too. Do you think right now, you asked me this before we started the podcast, and I'll ask you while we're doing it. Do you think right now the Grizzlies are a playoff team?
I do not. That's my straightforward answer. I think that the Grizzlies, it's that 500 record that scares me. Right now, the Grizzlies, I believe, are 13-9. The Grizzlies, basically, they were 12-5, and since then we are now, 2-4. Since then, I know that's a small sample size, but the Grizzlies, as they are playing right now, I do not think are a playoff team. What's keeping them going is the helium from the role players, Garrett Temple, Shelvin Mack, playing, in my opinion, above their heads. I wrote an article about this at Grizzly Bear Blues. You know, it's great that they're playing as they are, but if you're relying on them or third or fourth scoring options, it's going to be hard for that to stay. They're going to have to change their games to be able to do that for a full season, and that's just something that I don't think they can do. But in my opinion right now, the way the Grizzlies are playing, I don't think they're a playoff team. I think they will stay a contender for a lot of the year, because if they play 500 and stay above five or six games above 500 going into January and February, they'll stay a playoff contender. But if they go through another losing stretch and get back to 500, that's you asking them to play 9 or 10 games above 500 the rest of the season from that point. And I just don't think they have it in them. But I think they'll stay a playoff contender, but I don't see them as a playoff team right now.
Yeah, I mean, those guys you mentioned, they're not third scoring options. They're role players. That's exactly what they are. You should not be asking them to do, and that's why they've lost a few of the games they've lost. I've talked about it before. I've said it. I mean, it's you're asking Shelvin Mack to do things that Shelvin Mack can't do. And I love Garrett Temple. He's my favorite player to talk to. But you're asking Garrett Temple to do things that Garrett Temple shouldn't be asked to do. Namely some of those games where you have Garrett Temple taking a step back three who gets blocked. I mean, to try to tie the game. You're asking Garrett Temple to do things that Garrett Temple can't do. And so, I think if they're going to want, if they want to be a playoff team, they have to find a way, just like you said, to find alternate scoring. And I think they have a third alternate scorer on the bench or on that team, which is Jaren Jackson Jr. I just don't think he's being utilized enough. He's scoring the ball, but I think he could average 18, 19 points a game if you really got him, locked in on the offense and throughout the whole game, not just the first half of the game. I think he could average 18, 19 points a game.
And that's the thing that I will say is that's where you run into kind of a fork in the road. That's where you kind of need to look at the direction of the team. Do you make a move now to go get that scoring option and sacrifice some of the future to go in on this year, maybe to get a, seventh or eighth seed in the playoffs and get a first round exit? Or do you keep your assets for the future and move forward? For me, the answer to that is that you don't sacrifice the future. You already are likely going, Joe Mullinax said a few weeks ago, I agree with him in that I would just like to get the first round lost pick out this year that's going to the Celtics. I don't want to do anything to potentially sacrifice another first round pick because we need those as a small market team to build around Jaren. So that's what it comes down to. At the end of the day, do you make the move now to get the scoring piece that you need to stay a playoff contender for this year and sacrifice the future, or keep the ship going to focus on the future and have as much success as you can with what you have now? I'm on the latter end. So I really do think that, you're just going to have to go with what you have. Maybe trade JaMychal for a wing, and if you can get scoring out of that, go whereas that may. But I think you just stick with the roster that you have, use your expiring contracts to get a wing, and that's how I think you get the scoring in eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I think I know the answer to the – I think I know what the Grizzlies' answer to that question is I don't think I've ever seen them not sacrifice for the short term. I don't think I've ever seen them save for the long term, for sure. They absolutely lucked into Jaren Jackson. I mean, as far as just, they were just bad and they got the fourth pick and they picked him, obviously, and they made a good selection. But as far as just being bad that year, it's not like they planned on being bad or they even thought they were going to be bad. It's just a situation where they just kind of lucked into injuries and all that jazz. So they never once made a decision for the future. So I think I know the answer to their question of what they're going to try and do. Now, we'll, that remains to be seen, and we'll see how that plays out as we get into the later months. But coming up next in the after the in the third segment after the break, we're going to talk about this Grizzlies-Pelicans matchup, what the Grizzlies can do to win this game if they can against the Pelicans, who are 13-13 on the season, surprisingly not as good as I thought they would be right now in the season. So we'll do that coming up next. Welcome back to the show. As we're just talking through this Grizzlies-Pelicans matchup, we're going to talk about that next. I got a good friend, Sean Coleman, hanging out with me tonight, and he is, as I record this on Thursday night for a Friday podcast, he's going to be taking over for me next week, doing a guest hosting podcast all week next week. So let's get right into this Pelicans matchup. I mean, this Pelicans team, 13-13 on the season, 11th in the NBA, in the Western Conference, excuse me, not in the NBA, but in the Western Conference, just coming off a win versus Dallas. Matchup is Friday night in New Orleans. This team is probably not as, I'd say they're probably not where they thought they would be right now in this point of the season. You know, you look at this team and they have, Anthony Davis. I don't know why I blanked on Anthony Davis's name, but they have Anthony Davis, who is averaging 27-12. They have Nikola Mirotic, who's averaging 18-10. I mean, you look at those numbers, and Drew Holiday's averaging 20 points a game. Julius Randle's averaging 18-9. Almost three players on their team are averaging a double-double. And you look at the team, and you're like, man, if you just looked at those stats without knowing anything else, you would think they would be a better record-wise team than they are, but they're not. And so that doesn't mean they're not a good team. That's for sure. It's still a very good Pelicans team and a team that the Grizzlies do struggle with. You know, it depends on how they're going to guard Anthony Davis, which could totally change this year because they have Jaren Jackson Jr. now. You know, this team is second in total rebounds, second in offensive rebounds. I think we looked up the second chance points, their first and second chance points at 16.8. You know, something that the Grizzlies really struggle with, that we've talked about this yesterday on the rankings, our rankings update. They're continually last in rebounding in the rebounding in the game. They're continually last in second chance points. Something the Grizzlies really struggle with, and something the Pelicans, would do so well, is rebounding the ball, creating more possessions. They are first in the amount of points, total points that have been scored in the entire NBA. And that tells you, that gives you all you need to think. They create, you know, probably 13 to 15 extra possessions per game. And then they outscore their opponents. But just by doing that, by going to the boards, and you look at it, the numbers bear those out. They have almost three players averaging a double-double. So I ask you, Sean, I say all that to say this. What do the Grizzlies do to win this game?
Pray. I don't think that they're, you have deeper teams, you probably have overall more talented teams, but in terms of a unit that you would like to model your NBA franchise after, I think it's hard to argue against the Pelicans front court. They're Mirotic, Randle, and Davis, just they're three young guys who are in the prime of their careers who are just playing excellent basketball. I think Randle struggled a little bit more than most people thought. But, you know, their record kind of, you know, shows that you really can't have a polarizing team that is very top-heavy. They're a team that, you know, features Jrue Holiday and their front court. Beyond that, they have some nice pieces, but, you know, it's nothing that just stands out. But at the end of the day, you know, when you have a polarizing team who is so good on offense and so good in the front court, but they're also 29th in the league and, you know, in assists given up, you know, teams can pass on them. So what's going to help the Grizzlies out, I feel, is, okay, they're going to get rebounds, but you've got to take smart shots, and you've really got to try to keep the ball from getting low. That's a thing I think the Grizzlies can try to do. Keep the ball in front of you on defense. Use your length on the perimeter to try to create some extra possessions. And then, you know, when I say keep them in front of you, make sure that they're also not getting rebounds. I think that's the big focus for the Grizzlies, is you're not going to win the rebounding battle more than likely, but if you can keep them in front of you, it makes it easier to box out, and it also allows for you to be able to keep them from getting low on offense, get easy buckets.
Yeah, this Pelicans team is, I believe, fourth in the NBA in offensive rating. Not a great defensive team, a 23rd in defensive rating. They score a lot of points per game, second in the league in points per game, 118 per game. You know, they it's almost – a lot, very similar to the Clippers. Clippers, you know, they score a lot of points per game. So they're going to have to continue to try to stop these elite offenses. I mean, like I said, we said earlier, they've tripled down on our defense. So it will be interesting to see what they do. I mean, they have, you know, the Pelicans have basically Darius Miller, Julius Randle, Wesley Johnson, Solomon Hill coming off the bench. I mean, those are pretty much it. In a 9-10 man rotation. So, I mean, I don't know what you think about Darius Miller or Wesley Johnson, but not great. I mean, you know, the Grizzlies are going to have a chance in the second in the bench unit to really capitalize, and get some buckets. So it will be interesting to see how they play that, you know, how they stagger rotations to be able to maybe maximize that. If the Grizzlies, I think the Grizzlies will probably play Mark on Anthony Davis, if I had to guess. But if they do put Jaren Jackson Jr. on, it'll be a welcome to the league kind of moment for him. Anthony Davis is so good. But I've always said, I said that it's in the middle of the summer, and someone asked me, and I said, I honestly, Jaren Jackson reminds me more of Anthony Davis than anybody else.
I had a couple of talks on Twitter earlier this week, and you know, we were talking about Jaren Jackson, and I put his career spectrum on, you know, if he's Rasheed Wallace as a floor and Anthony Davis as a ceiling. You know, to me, he's like a couple of 2K modifications from those two players. But that's what gets me so excited about this game. Beyond it being a division game, beyond seeing them, is Jaren Jackson against likely his best front court competition. And I think that is a big point. He's going to have a big game. I'll tell you another focus beyond seeing how Jaren competes and, you know, produces against this good of a front court. It's that backup point guard matchup. Elfrid Payton and Shelvin Mack. It feels like this will have to be a game because I do think the Pelicans are more talented. I think that we're going to have a game from Shelvin Mack and Garrett Temple like they played at the beginning of the year. You know, I've been on record as saying I think that they were playing above their heads. They're now kind of regressing a little bit. But if they can have one of their games to where we get a combined 30 points from them, I think that puts us in the position to win. But I think you bring up a good point. The bench matchup, we're going to have to win that. Our defense is going to have to play excellent. We're going to have to keep their second unit from scoring. If we can significantly outproduce them once the game goes to the benches, especially in the Mac Payton matchup, I think that gives us the best chance to win.
Yeah, and we'll also be able to see exactly how Joakim Noah really, how good is he really right now? I mean, he's going to be going up against, you know, not terrible backup bigs. And so you're really going to need and really see how well he improves your rebounding for the Grizzlies. Because the Grizzlies, this is an important one for the Grizzlies. Yes, it's an away game, but I think it's a winnable game. Because you come back home, you got the Lakers, you got the Nuggets, Blazers, Heat, which is a winnable game. But then you go Rockets, Warriors, Blazers, Kings, Lakers. I mean, the next 10 games or so are brutal, to say the least. And you could easily... I mean, you could easily only win those. You could in the next 10 games, you could literally only win two games. I mean, scarily to think, but you could go 2-8. I mean, easily. I don't think they will. I think they'll probably keep it around 500 if I had to guess. But it's not a far fetched idea to say you could go 2-8 though.
And I agree completely. And that's when the last segment that we were talking about the reason why I'm not as confident as some other folks are about a playoff opportunity, because if we go 2-8, we go 3-7 during this stretch. Any momentum that we have had through the first part of the year, it's gone now. And again, you're asking for this team to try to be able to play, you know, 5 to 10 games above 500 the rest of the year. It's going to be hard. But this stretch is going to be fun. We think that we are a playoff team, which, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we did. I think there's a better chance that we don't. But at the end of the day, we're playing the meat of the West, and it's going to be fun to see how we stack up. And like you said, I think we go 4-6, 5-5 through it. But it's going to take some efforts from players beyond Mark and Mike. That's again puts my focus back on JB. Also, he's going to have to coach to add value to give us a chance to win because we're going to play more talented teams. So my focus is really on him, seeing how Jaren continues to develop against better quality talent, and hopefully we'll get some advantages through the bench to steal a couple of wins out of the stretch.
Absolutely, except the Grizzlies take on the Pelicans Friday night. To see who wins that matchup is a divisional matchup, like Sean said. Again, I'll be out next week. Sean will be doing our guest hosting for the podcast next week. We'll have all the normal segments we normally do. We'll have our Monday mailbag. So if you have questions, make sure you get those in. You can tweet the show at Locked On Grizz, or you can send in the email at lockedongrizz@gmail.com. And Sean, what's your Twitter?
It's Stats SAC. STATSSAC.
At Stats SAC.
SAC.
SAC. Stat Sack is Sean's Twitter. So you can hit him up as well for a Monday mailbag questions for next week. We'll be doing all the regular segments throughout the week. Again, I appreciate you stepping in and helping me out while my family appreciates it as well while I'll be out of town. Again, I'm Mark King. You can find me online at King_producer. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on the show, please email me at lockedongrizz@gmail.com. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, or online at Grizzlies, lockedongrizzlies.com.